Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to PWT Talks NXT. Oh, hey, I'm getting an echo. Hold on. I'm going to try that again. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT for November 15th, 2022. I'm Nate Lindberg, your host for the evening. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg for at least the time being, as long as Twitter, you know, still exists tomorrow, you know, at the rate it's going anyway. We're here to talk NXT, though, not about Twitter. Right, Bruce?
Sure.
Okay. all right. So, Bruce, who are you? Since we already brought you on.
Hi, I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at @B_Lee253. You can also find my report on tonight's NXT up on the Torch and on the VIP side.
And I did forget to mention, I write the NXT hits and misses as well, so you can check those out on NXT. On PWTorch.com. And if you want to be part of this show, you can email us at PWTorchNXT@gmail.com, which a couple of you guys, or actually at least one of you did tonight. And we also have a few of you guys on the phone lines. If you want to be part of the show on the phone, you could call in at 515-605-9345, press 1 on the keypad, and that'll let me know you guys want to talk. And you know what? That is what we're going to do tonight. We're going to just say, screw it. We're not going to talk about the main event. We're just going to go straight to the phone lines tonight, and we're going to go straight to our good friend Darrell. Darrell, I think you can hear me. Yep, you can. All right. Darrell, how are we doing tonight, man?
All right. How you guys doing tonight?
Doing good, man. Doing good. So you said on Twitter that that you thought the show was fire.
Oh, no. I didn't think it was fire. That was a burning emotions and burnt down.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All those dots beforehand should have been the key, Nate.
Hey, I'm not perceptive. I just saw the fire emoji, and I'm just going, hey, Darrell thinks the show is fire.
This was not a fire show.
I'm not hip when it comes to the emojis, man. I've just started throwing them in my text messages. I still write out emoticons. You guys remember emoticons?
No? Oh, yeah.
Okay. Anyway. Oh, man. So, all right. You don't think it was fire. You thought it was a dumpster fire. What do you got for us, Darrell?
Okay, to start off, I'm going to start off how they started off. The first match, first of all, I would like to say this. You know, been watching NXT for the longest, done seen every different segment of NXT, like how they came up, what they changed to be. After a while, now looking at it, man, I don't know what to say. Starting off with this first match, I know I'm probably in not with a lot of people, but something been missing with Braun, and you know, kind of boring. The build up the same matches, the matches be the same. It seemed like when they make contenders, they don't really make contenders. They're just making another match and throwing another person in there to continue the way how these matches are being made and being made to play out for both of the main titles, which I think have driven the level of interest in, because there's no interest in those titles. Like with Braun, no storytelling in these matches that will make you want to ingratiate or just get into the match as a whole. And that match right there started off such a slugfest that it bored me. It was a boring match from top to bottom. What did you guys think about it before I hit the roof?
So I went into the match with such low expectations that it actually was better than I thought it was going to be. I wouldn't say it was a banger by any stretch of imagination, which is kind of how I worded it in my hits and misses. But it was certainly better than I thought it was going to be. I was kind of just expecting, you know, big men in the ring slapping big sweaty man meat. And they did kind of give us a halfway decent, it kind of was some of that, but they gave it kind of a halfway decent match as well. At least from my perspective anyway, I didn't necessarily hate it. But, It it kind of felt like it did go a little bit too long. I don't feel like Von Wagner is in a spot where let me rephrase that. I don't feel like Von Wagner has like an arsenal of moves that can really, and same with Bron Breakker for that matter too. Although
he's not that arsenal of moves.
Well, yeah, right. But that's kind of my point is he can only have matches. It's kind of like Goldberg. Like Goldberg can only have like those super small squash matches because he only has like seven moves, two moves, whatever it is, just a handful of moves. And Von Wagner's kind of in that same boat. He's only really got a handful of moves that he tries to break out. And, you know, some of them he does well, some of them not so much. But I feel like this match went a little bit too long considering who he had in the ring. I also like part of the disinterest for me in the match. I gave this a 75% hit in the hits and misses. So a little. I was enjoying the show tonight. But I gave this a 75% hit, and part of the reason I didn't give it like a an actual hit was because I didn't think there was any stretch. There was no chance that Von Wagner was actually going to win tonight. I don't think that they would make Bron Breakker lose on NXT TV, especially in the first match of the night. Him losing is going to be a much bigger deal than that. So that right then and there, I knew Von Wagner wasn't going to win. So it kind of took me out of it a little bit. Like I said, the match is still a little better than I expected it to be, but I really wasn't super invested in it because of that, but also because of another point that you brought up. Bron Breakker's title reign has just seemed so stale lately. We talked about it when he was facing J.D. McDonough and Ilya Dragunov. It just seems like it needs to change. And I agree with you on Mandy Rose as well. You know, we can get there. We'll get there a little bit later too. But I feel like her time as champion needs to come to an end as well. I think Bron Breakker much more so. Like if Mandy still holds it for another couple of months, I think it's okay. And I feel like they can do, especially with Isla Dawn, interfering in the main event tonight. I feel like there's a few different places that they can go right now where it'll still be interesting. But, right now, Bron Breakker and his just super dominant title reign, it's old. I'm kind of sick of it. We saw it with Roman Reigns. We've seen it with John Cena. We've seen it with a whole bunch of other baby faces in the past. And I don't know. I really feel like personally, I want to see Bron Breakker lose the title, turn heel, and I want to see what he can do as a heel. He's still going to be a Steiner, but I want to see what he can do as a heel because I think as a heel, he may be able to flip people like me, presumably like you guys and probably some of you guys listening as well, who kind of like, I want to like Bron Breakker, but his act and his gimmick is just so kind of two-dimensional right now that it's not something that I feel like is going to be successful, kind of going forward if they continue to keep him as champion for months to come. Bruce.
So, I mean, Darrell listens to us, so he knows that we haven't really been high on Bron Breakker pretty much the entire time that he's been champion. So, I also realized I mistyped at the end of my report when I said that the men's title match was one of the must-see matches. I got the mixed up with McDonough and Cruz. But this was, it's not the only boring match of the night, that's for damn sure. And, for me, you know what you're going to get with Bron Breakker, and you know what you're going to get with Von Wagner, and this is probably the best you're going to get out of them together, and that's still not saying much. I wrote that it was so predictable, the match, the entire match, how it was laid out, what was going to happen, every near fall, that when Wagner hit his finisher, that rude bomb, Death Valley bomb thing that he does, I didn't even reach to try and stop the clock, the timer, because I knew that Breakker was going to kick out of that. It wasn't even... Like, there was no, how do I put this? Nothing about the story that was being told was believable enough to me to where I found any investment to where anything or something like that should have had me more like, oh my goodness, he kicked out of the finisher. It was just, yeah, that was supposed to happen. So I will defend Mandy Rose a little bit here because this is a bit surprising because I'm not really her biggest fan either. But, as we've discussed before.
Who are you and what have you done with Bruce?
Definitely not Kelly. So the thing here we have to remember is as much as I think a lot of our perceptions of who Mandy Rose was before she came to NXT has helped color our views of her. And yes, her in-ring still isn't great, but when you look back at her title defenses, outside of a few, and really the only one I can think of off the top of my head right now is the Halloween Havoc match with Kaylee Ray because of Dolan and Jane interfering at the end. But for pretty much every title match she has, she comes out alone, and she wins the match alone with no shenanigans, and she wins clean. So even though she hasn't been received as well by us, by a lot of the fans, because, again, I think it's a lot of the stuff we think about from before, she, the way they, how they've been booking her in her matches, especially her title defenses, has been very strong. And if this was any other person, I think, as champion getting all these clean victories, I think there would be a different discussion. And that's not to say that I think Mandy Rose is, as she says, is one of the most dominant women's champions of all time. They're booking her title matches that way, but the quality of the work isn't reaching the heights of an Asuka or a Shayna Baszler, right? So I'll quibble with her a little bit there, but I can't quibble with the fact that the booking of her matches has been one of, or have been one of her, keeping her very strong and giving her clean finishes. So, and, you know, since we're on that match, I guess I'll just bring that up real quick. Kelly really wanted, I don't want to say really wanted, but he said last week that he saw this as the time to have Fire win the title off of her because it's the perfect type of match for that, right? No one takes a clean loss or anything. It's a gimmick match, whatnot. But in that same regard, it's the perfect type of match for, you know, to keep the title off Fire while keeping her still strong and debuting someone that helps Mandy Rose keep her title but doesn't seem to be associated with Mandy Rose in any way. So I think the Isle of Dawn is more here to feud with Kaylee Ray. I didn't watch NXT UK enough to know that, to know if, I think Isle of Dawn had a title match while Kaylee Ray was champion but lost. So I think there's something there that they can channel for this sort of feud and to give Dawn a reason to have attacked Alba Fire beyond the fact that they're both in NXT UK. But then the big question again just becomes, who are they going to have defeat Mandy Rose? And right now, I'm not sure if there's anyone, unless they turn Rose babyface, I'm not sure there's anyone that they can look at right now as the person that they're going to have as the one to defeat her, unless, of course, you know, they go back to that well that they've only done once or maybe twice, and let's go back to Sonya Deville and see if she's going to come back or not. But, yeah, beyond that, I think that the last year of NXT, the champions that we have been, that we've cared about, having Carmelo Hayes as the North American champion and the Creed brothers and Pretty Deadly as tag team champions, we really haven't thought too much about Breaker and Rose in regards to representing the brand as a champion. So that's probably a low point in terms of the lineage of those two championships.
Which is really unfortunate, especially for the women's title. But, you know, is what it is. At least if it's going to be Mandy, if Mandy Rose's name has to be on the list of champions for the women's title, at least they gave her a dominant reign and they didn't just throw her in there for like 30 days or something. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Darrell, back to you.
Okay. Yeah. And just to touch up on what I mean by all of this is because when you think of the champions right now in all of the matches that they don't have, it hasn't been a story about where you see a story with the competitor or whoever they facing and a story with them and the title. It's hard to tell a story with most of them since probably maybe Braun in the beginning and his story and him trying to quick pass with Tommaso Ciampa. That quick, fast story that they told right there or something like that, or Mandy coming back, trying to redefine herself, that's at the beginning. But after that, ever since then, the story has been really the matches. Braun Breaker, okay, we're gonna look a little sloppy. We're gonna do the shoulder thing. They're going to focus on the shoulder. Within me trying to sell, build sympathy, they're going to hit me when they finish. I'm going to kick out. Flash, fast move, boom, spear, got you. Mandy Rose matches. this what they been. Let me give you about 5 minutes, a couple of stall tactics. I'ma sell a little bit. Here comes somebody out to distract you for a minute. Okay, you're gonna look like you're gonna overcome the distraction. Then boom, surprise, I'm gonna hit you with a move. Boom, I'm gonna pin you. Even the probably the last 5 matches have even been the case. We didn't think one of the toxic attraction people were going to be there. Boom, they come out. Before that, after that, it was Sonya Deville come out because I don't have none of the toxic attraction people come out. Boom. Now, Isla Dawn come out. Boom. Who, since I was an NSU UK person, she was like in the R-Truth role in UK. That's what they had her for a moment, you know. So it just the stories for the titles haven't been interesting enough where you can build up like back when you had the story of Rhea Ripley when she won the title and just how dominant she was and coming off of pinning Shayna Baszler, who was a dominant champion of herself, and people wanting to see the story. Let's go about when Shayna Baszler, when she was coming in, snapping people's arms and stuff, and Ember Moon, who just was able to finally get the title, and can she even stand up to Shayna Baszler, who looking like she's taking advantage of her the whole time. Go all the way back to Oscar when Oscar came in and Bayley, who finally found herself, just got over the fact of being Sasha Banks, got over the scare role, and now she's confident. She's feeling herself. Now you got this unstoppable empress who been on a year-long undefeated streak. Let's see what Bayley can do. Just those type of stories that brought you in, even with the man's title. Sami Zayn coming in. Sami just could win the big one. Different bookers, but bookers in the same sort of type of way, and just you know, just booking one on one to be a point, because some of the stuff was just old school storytelling that you could get from anywhere else. But I understand what you're saying because they can tell it to you in another way with the other titles, which I'm so mad at. And going to my next thing. I don't know why they had to have Booker T in that interview segment with Carmelo Hayes. Like, the best thing that they had going and the story that they telling with that you wish that you would get the main title, he didn't have to – all the shucky-ducky, quack-quack and stuff. I just felt like it pulled down the segment, which they could have had, and if they would have just let those two guys went out there and did their thing – With all the extra antics, that killed that segment for me. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, Booker T, like, man, I loved him as a wrestler. On the mic, like, every once in a while, he says something that, you know, is somewhat worthwhile. But like, man, in NXT, I don't like, especially the pairing of him and Vic Joseph. They don't really seem to play well off of each other. And Booker just, man, like you said, you know, the shucky ducky quack quack. Like I even said this to Kelly Tom and Bruce in our group chat on Twitter. I'm like, did they really just end this segment without a fight simply so Booker T could say, can you dig it, sucka? I mean, I'm sure they probably didn't, but like, that's kind of how it felt to me anyway. It was like, he just wanted to get his shit in. I don't know. It did feel like it took a little bit away, or Booker took a little bit away from me. Like, for example, like when Kevin Owens came down and did the Kevin Owens show, you know, at NXT, you know, a few weeks ago, a month ago, however long ago it was, not that long ago. You know, he still was able to feel like a star, but he didn't feel like he took away from the segment. Everybody in the segment, you know, Dragunov, it was Dragunov, Bron Breakker, and Madonna. They all, for the most part, you know, shined in that segment. There's Dragunov, maybe not so much, but everybody shined in that segment, and Kevin Owens didn't really feel like he was taking away from anybody's spotlight, if you will. Whereas tonight, I definitely felt like the spotlight was taken away a bit from Wesley and Carmelo Hayes, by the things, Booker T was saying. It's one thing to kind of get your stuff in, but it's another thing to kind of overshadow the actual, active talent standing in the ring. Bruce, I know you're such a huge fan of Booker T on commentary, so curious to hear what you think.
Such a huge fan, he makes me want to poke my own ears on with that sharp needle. So
exactly.
Yeah, everyone was wondering why they didn't just re-sign Nigel and why they switched. Wade Barrett being back would be, as much as he had his things that annoyed me, he's not to the level of Booker T or Corey Graves, that's for sure. And it wasn't just this segment. He said the McDonough Cruz match in the middle of it was for a title, was for a championship, and Graves was like, "Well, it's for a championship. It could be for a championship opportunity." I'm like,
"That's right."
Elie Joseph is there to correct. He had to correct Booker T a couple times tonight, actually. And here, so Booker T. Let me just put it this way. A friend and I put it simply that he delivers cliches with gusto, and people somehow buy that because of his delivery. He just says a lot of empty words that mean a whole lot of nothing when you really think about what he says, because half the time putting together don't really connect. So in this segment, I thought there was one really funny part about this segment with Booker T, and that's when he'd be interrupted by Trick Williams and he would just glare at him like, "Tell me he did not just say that." I mean,
I'm surprised he didn't even say that. Like, he didn't say that, honestly.
So I thought that was okay, but I think Wesley really shined here, especially when he got enraged that Williams told him to shut the hell up because no one wants to hear what he has to say. I thought that was a really good moment for Wesley. Lee was really out there again. He's just been doing really well since he came back as a singles competitor and putting over his journey, how much it's meant to him that people have supported him and that he never knew he had this because he was always in a team or a stable. This is his first real shot at the singles run, and this is his first singles title. So it's not just his first title defense of this North American Championship next week. It's his first singles title defense of any company ever. At least that's what they tell us in NXT. So that being the case, I really like, if you take Booker T out of it, I think Hayes and Williams and Lee did a really good job here of selling the match to the viewers, because I know I'm really hyped for the match next week. I'm really glad I won't have to recap the match because of how it's probably going to be a 15-20 minute affair. I wouldn't be surprised. And I'm really looking forward to that match. It's going to definitely be one of those that is up there with Frazer Axiom match 3 as NXT matches of the year on TV.
I have no doubt about that.
I think Lee's going to retain here. And I think the plan then is going to be to either have Hayes go for the NXT title after Cruz, maybe take him off TV for a bit and have him come back, or Hayes and Williams move on to SmackDown. So whatever they do, though, Hayes, and especially Hayes, he's gonna be successful wherever they put him in, whatever role they put him in, because he got it down. And he's been, to me, the person that I've looked to as the star of NXT since 2.0 started. He's who I thought of as the champion that best represented NXT during the last year. And I think that it's one of those situations where it's like Bianca Belair, like, it just feels weird that they didn't get the main title. But, in Bianca's case, she really helped raise the level of the competition in the division. And because there was no mid-card women's title. And for Hayes, he really took the mid-card title and made it the top title on the show. So in a sense, he was the NXT champion, just not an actual title. So it does feel a little weird that way if he does leave without it. But I don't know what else there is for him left to do in NXT, because it just seems like he's outgrown the place at this point, which is hard for me to say because he's the best part of that show for me to watch. So, if he does indeed move on, good for him and good for Williams. And, if they go, I'm really looking forward to Wesley filling in that spot and working to be Hayes was the sort of dominant heel champion you could turn to. I'm looking forward to Lee becoming that babyface champion that everyone rallies around. So that match next week is going to be amazing. Take Booker T out of the segment tonight, and you have a good – if you just, like I said, just listen to what Lee and Hayes were saying and Williams, and you have a good segment.
No, I agree, and I didn't actually touch on that when I was talking about it. Like, I agree with what you're saying about the segment as a whole, if you take Booker T out of it. I really liked when, you know, Wesley just started talking over. I think it was Trick Williams. It might have no, actually, I think he started talking over Carmelo Hayes, rather, and then he snapped at Trick Williams. That's right. But I think this was a great segment for Wesley. I do think he's going to retain as well. I hope he retains. Not that I'll complain too much if Melo gets the title back, honestly, but for Wesley's story, I think it would be detrimental to his character if he lost it, I think, unless he lost it in some spectacular, dramatic way, you know, that can, you know, continue his baby, his underdog story. But
yeah,
I think
if they do like a British Bulldog Bret Hart finish with a coffin pin or something, that could be a way that it works. But beyond that, I think it's, I don't want to see shenanigans, you know, I just want to see a finish. So
I want to see a damn good match, which it's going to be, and mm-hmm. and a clean, decisive finish. Like that's what I'm looking forward to next week. Darrell, do you have anything else for us? I'll give you one more. We do still have another caller on the line.
Oh yeah. This is my last one. And then go to,
sure.
And it reflects with, first thing that I was speaking on. And yeah, I believe that segment as well was also good, without Booker T too. So just to comment on back and comment on that. But, the last one was, I like the JD and Apollo Crews. But I just didn't like what it was for. I understand Apollo Crews come back for, you know, to reclaim himself and, you know, to show everybody what he's about and go for the title. I just feel like having acts that come from the main roster come down and they feel like, whatever happened to you up there, it is what it is, and that's cool. But having them come down and just feel like they should get an NXT title shot, even though he went through a few different things, but just to come down and claim that they're going to be the next NXT champion, that's what's giving me the problem with it. We knew this was coming. We knew this was coming up. And I wish it would just, he coming back just to show stories and tell stuff. I put it to like maybe NBA basketball when they send somebody down to
the G League.
Usually when they send people down to the G League, it's like big time rookies or something that they drafted who haven't really panned out a little bit, need a little bit more seasoning and stuff like that. I would call those rookies Bron Breakers. And that's why I didn't mind when Bron Breakers came in and he was bossed up and got a title shot, because that's what you want to see, long as the story good. But when you got you somebody who is like a perennial nice man on the bench, or I even say somebody like JaVale McGee. We'll say a JaVale McGee. Somebody not a big name, they've been on part of teams and did a few things. Nothing big, though. And you would send them down to the... yep, true that. But, you know, you more know him as people calling him Magic Brunson and stuff like that, and Shaq and the Fool and stuff like that. And come in, and now you got them in, and you got them over the rookie that you looking to see who can he be a lead on your franchise or something like that and stuff. I feel like that just downgrades whatever that you have by having that competitor coming in and doing that. That also shows where you don't, your storytelling and the stories mean nothing, because you're just doing this as a cop-out, and we know that he's not going to be Braun or anything like that, or you know you're not going to try to put anything on him so you can build up another up-and-coming rookie to beat him or something like that. what do you guys like about it, and how did you guys like the match? And thank you for taking my call.
All right, Jarrell, thank you as always. So the match was you talk about the Apollo Crews and JD McDonough match, correct?
Yes, sir.
Awesome, awesome. I apologize. My headset was giving me a little trouble, so I missed like a little bit of it. But no, the match itself I thought was phenomenal. I think it was probably the match of the night, at least for me. Apollo Crews in NXT has been an anomaly. Like, I love the fact he's in NXT because I'm a huge Apollo Crews fan and I primarily watch NXT, so I kind of am glad to just see him on TV and on my show. But he's, you know, he came in, he right off the bat laid claim to the NXT title and then didn't touch the main event scene until like now. And it's been what, you know, 6, 7, 8 months since he's been in NXT. You know, I don't know exactly how long, but that sounds about right. You know, and he's gone through some crazy things, you know, those weird vignettes where he had those, you know, like psychic powers and the eye was bleeding and, you know, all that stuff. He's had this weird run in NXT. I'm kind of hoping that they're getting back to like his original gimmick, like his first type gimmick in NXT, maybe like a more of like, I mean, I guess like an evolution of it, because that gimmick was really just, hey, I'm a smiling dude and I do some flippy stuff and I'm going to win. So I kind of hope it's a bit of an evolution on that. But, you know, I'm optimistic about him in NXT. What I thought was weird about this was it seemed like they were going to, like, whoever was going to win this match might be the new number one contender for the NXT title, especially where after the first match of the night, after Bron Breakker defended his title, we saw both JD McDonagh and Apollo Crews separately approach Bron Breakker backstage and basically say, hey, I'm going to beat you for that title. So that's kind of how it felt like they were building this. And then they throw a monkey wrench in the whole thing a little bit later on when Shawn Michaels announces this whole Iron Survivor match, or I think that's what it was called. I'm not looking at my notes.
Iron Survivor Challenge, I think.
Challenge. Iron Survivor Challenge. I think that's what it was. And whoever winds up winning, you know, each one of the two challenges, one for the men, one for the women, will become the new number one contender. So I'm just kind of like, all right, they didn't say it was going to be the new number one contender, whoever – one out of McDonagh and Crews, but like that was, I don't know, it was kind of implied, and they do that all the time. So I guess in a way, like, I got to applaud them for doing something different and something that I didn't necessarily see coming. I definitely didn't see that match type coming. We'll talk about that later. But I didn't see them having some sort of like a tournament or match or anything to name a number one contender. I figured just kind of through story, they were going to have it be either JD McDonagh or Apollo Crews. Really curious to see who's going to wind up in that Iron Survivor Challenge, and you know, who's going to wind up feuding with Breakker. But haven't really had time to think about who's going to be in the match outside of, you know, a Crews and McDonagh, of course. But yeah, overall, like, I thought the match itself tonight was great. And I'm glad to see Apollo Crews get the win. McDonagh, like, I feel like he's lost like every match. He's like every major match he's really been in. Mm-hmm. But it also kind of fits the masochist type character. Like, you know, he just takes the punishment until he can't no more. Wow. That's English, Nate. So, you know, it kind of works, kind of fits. Bruce, what did you think of the whole shebang?
Well, since we're going to hit on the Iron Survivor Challenge a little later, I'll just stick on to this point because it relates directly to the question. I don't think Apollo Crews is going to be in the match because I think at Deadline he still needs to have a title match. And at this point, it seems like it's going to be Breakker and Crews in a title match at Deadline. And then
Iron Survivor Challenge. I forgot Breakker came out.
Yeah, I forgot Breakker came out
at the end of the match.
So I think they're going to have the title match at Deadline with the Iron Survivor Challenge determining the next challenger for Breakker coming out of Deadline.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Like I said, I completely forgot Bron Breakker came out at the end of the Apollo Crews and McDonagh match and kind of stared down with Apollo Crews. So that's probably
probably what's going to wind up happening there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
To your point about McDonough losing all of his matches, and it's still kind of seeming, all his big matches are still kind of seeming like he's Teflon to a certain extent, or it doesn't really matter. He's basically like Darby Allin in more ways than one. So,
yeah.
And then if you look at this match as a whole, it was definitely the match of the night. Good match. To what you and Dro have been talking about, though, I'm going to be a bit of a detractor and kind of defend things from Cruz's side a bit here. So, match was great. I thought the actual finish caught me by surprise, a one-arm spinebuster, which I've only seen Bobby Lashley use recently in WWE to actually get finishes. The old Ron Simmons one-arm spinebuster, but
I thought he pulled that off so well too. That looked great.
Well, if you think about last night on Raw, I don't know if you watched, but Lashley hit Ali with about three of them last night too, and so I guess we're seeing a comeback of the one-arm spinebuster as a devastating move. So, but beyond that, if you listen to me for a while, you follow my reports and whatnot, listen to me on shows like On the Canvas with Zach and the post shows with Wade and Zach, you'll know that for me, coherency and storytelling and keeping them all together is really big for me. And the thing with Apollo Crews is he's made it known from the very beginning of his return that he came to get the title. But I pretty sure in that return promo, he also said he knows he can't just get handed the title shot, so he's got to work to get there, which explains the journey he's been on, because unlike Dolph Ziggler, he didn't just come in and get a title shot and then win, right? He actually said, I need to work my way up. So I want to defend him a bit there. And then storyline-wise, both Cruz and McDonough, Cruz from the beginning while Breakker has been champion, but McDonough recently, they've never shied away or even while they've been embroiled in other feuds, they've never detracted from the fact that their main goal still is to become champion. And so them confronting Breakker is not surprising to me, especially when you have, you know, Ilya Dragunov recovering in Germany, as Mackenzie Mitchell told Big Body Javi earlier, or someone else who wasn't medically clear that I can't think off the top of my head. But you need to have some people there right now to contend with him. And the only people at the top right now around that level are these two. So you've already seen McDonough and Breakker. And while it was a good match, I going back to that right now is too soon. So you go with Cruz. And you still have that built-in story of him from 6-8 months ago through now where he's been trying to get to the NXT Championship. So I'll defend it in that regard. And again, I think this is a title match at Deadline. Right now, again, I have to see how the next few weeks play out toward Deadline, but I'd say as of right now, I still don't think Breakker is going to lose that title to Cruz, but it really depends on how the next few weeks play out and how they book the angles between them. Are they going to be in matches together? Are they going to have promo face-offs? This and that. I really want to see what happens and who gets the upper hand in what ways during the next few weeks as they lead into Deadline, because it would be a nice capper for Cruz and the story for him to come back and win. I just don't know if there's enough fan support for, and I like Cruz, but I just don't know if there's going to be enough fan support for him to actually be the one to take it off of Braun Breakker. So that aside, I do think that consistent to the story of Apollo Crews from the beginning of him winning that title and him having to work his way up, and this was his definitive clean victory to get that title shot that he's been coveting since he returned.
You know, I kind of agree with you that, you know, I don't think the fan support would necessarily be there. Like, I'd be on board with it, but I don't necessarily think, like, story-wise, most people would wind up believing it. It has been, like you said, they've at least been consistent with that part of his story. You know, I know we haven't had any more of the, like, weird, you know, visions and stuff ever since, you know, he's kind of laid claim to wanting to, you know, win the title. But yeah, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by it. Like, I don't think he's necessarily going to win. If you know, if that is that match does wind up happening at Deadline, they haven't officially announced it yet, but it looks like that's probably what we're gonna wind up seeing. But yeah, I don't think he'd necessarily be the one to win. I think I also want to see, you know, and actually this probably is a good time to
Yeah, we can talk about. Let's talk about
the challenge
real quick, because we kind of keep dancing around it. So HBK came on a pre-taped segment tonight, and he announced a new match type at NXT Deadline, an Iron Survivor Challenge for both the men and the women, 5 superstars in each match with a 25-minute clock. Essentially get as many falls as you can, and for each fall, you earn a point. If you wind up getting pinned, you lose a point, and you go to the penalty box for, I believe it was 90 seconds. Correct me if I'm wrong, Bruce.
I thought it was a minute, but I was also typing along and trying to do all that. So
it might have been a minute. It might have been a minute. Might have been 90 seconds. I know when I wrote 90 seconds, I was like 40% sure I was right. But essentially, you go to a penalty box for a short period of time.
60 to 90 seconds, put it that way.
Yeah, exactly. You go to a penalty box for a short period of time if you wind up getting pinned. And like I said, you also lose a point. Whoever has the most points after 25 minutes will become the new number one contender. Now, first off, I think this is a cool idea. I'm always down for some new match types and things like that. I'm cool, like the Fight Pit. You know, I thought like the Fight Pit was awesome, and they've brought that back a few times. So I'm kind of intrigued. I'm really intrigued with this challenge. I think that there is an easy built-in shenanigans here for the finish, because whoever has the most points after 25 minutes. Well, what's going to happen when two people have the same amount of points after 25 minutes? They have not addressed that.
When it's Grayson Waller.
Yeah, you know, like, I'm assuming that they'll wind up going into, you know, if there is a tie, they'll wind up going to a sudden death or whatever. But, you know, knowing WWE, they'll probably be like, oh, my God, we didn't think about that. And
it's a triple threat match.
Now it's a triple threat. Or, you know, they'll wind up booking another angle for the two, you know, people that have a tie or whatever. Outside of that kind of glaring plot hole, I really like this idea. It's interesting. It kind of, we were talking about this a little bit, before we went on air, and like, it kind of has shades of like, you know, Bruce brought up King of the Mountain from, you know, TNA and Impact, has kind of some shades of that. There's some shades of like the Elimination Chamber without the Elimination Chamber itself, and you have a penalty box instead. So you get a really tiny chamber, individual one, I guess. But you know, there's a lot of things that have been pulled, the championship scramble match. You're kind of a lot of elements pulled from different matches kind of go into this. But it's intriguing. I kind of like the point system. And I'm kind of wondering who's going to wind up in the match, or matches for both the men and women. They did show quite a few, you know, potential candidates on the screen, like Zoe Stark for the women. I'm sure she's going to be in there. Would not surprise me if she won either. Actually, I take that back.
I think she might be Mandy Rose's next challenger.
Yeah, well, maybe. It kind of
depends. We'll get to it when we talk about her. How about that?
Yeah, we'll get there. So real quick, you know, how do you feel about this, this Iron Man challenge or Iron Survivor challenge, where they might be going with it? Then we'll get over to you, Ryan. We'll bring you on the show.
First, I wonder how many takes it took Shawn Michaels to not say Iron Man because of how much that match has been linked to him and his career.
Maybe that's why they recorded it.
That's true. Yeah, the match is definitely a fusion of Championship Scramble and a King or Queen of the Mountain match. Without the ladder, like you said, no pause for the chamber, but there is a penalty box like they had in King of the Mountain. What was always funny to me is when you'd have two people or more who would have to enter the penalty box at one time. But I think in King of the Mountain, the penalty was much longer. I think it was it 5 minutes? I don't remember. But
I don't think I've watched a King of the Mountain match, to be honest. Yeah.
A unique match type. It's different, but we're seeing that NXT is kind of their testing ground for new match types. And if they succeed there, they bring them to the main roster, like we saw with the Fight Pit and we're seeing with War Games for Survivor Series. So if this proves to be successful, I can definitely see this coming to the main roster as another variation of the Championship Scramble that they've done on TV before as title matches. So,
Brian Kendrick and a WWE champion.
Exactly, for however many seconds it was.
But it happened.
The thing, the thing that I guess like here is that it really opens the door for you as the booker to try and tell a real good story throughout the show or throughout the match that can give you a surprise winner to try and build them up as a future star. Who that might be, I don't know. But, you know, I'm looking through the roster right now. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be Apollo Crews in that match because I think he's going to be Breaker's challenger at that pay-per-view. But, you know, it could be Charlie Dempsey in there. It could be if Tony D'Angelo's not ready yet, then it could be Stax. Let's see. I'm talking about the men's side here, just on the men's side. You know, if Tyler Bate is healthy, he could most definitely be in that match. If you wanted to go Oro Mensah, true, he's another one that you could go with. But if it was me, okay, I would work a story starting next week where even though they are working to be a great tag team, get Idris and Ofe a qualifying match, have him win, put him on a run in the match, get him to be the number one contender, get him to be an opponent to give everyone the taste of all the potential we know that he has. And while he wouldn't win the match against Breaker, I think it'd be one of those kind of, you know, how do I put this without making it sound like I'm actually comparing them to these two? Kind of give him like an Undertaker Jeff Hardy moment. You know what I'm saying? For Idris and Ofe with Braun Breaker. I think that's the route I'd want them to go. But that's just me looking at it right now without having really done a thorough look through the whole roster on the men's side. On the women's side, you got Zoe Stark. But again, I think she's going to be the title contender. Ariana Grace could be a choice. You know, Cora Jade, Indy Hartwell, Roxanne Perez, those last two made it clear tonight they want to be in that match. They want to be in the contest for number one contender. You could put a Wendy Chu in there. You could put a Last Legends. It'd be nice to have someone like Mako Satomura come back and be in it. It could also be a place where you try and elevate someone like Fallon Henley. So I think there are a lot of options, intriguing options, because of the type of match that it is and the talent that could be in the match and what that represents. So again, every 5 minutes, a competitor comes in with two people starting. So after the 15-minute mark, you'll have all five competitors in the match, and you have 10 minutes then of just them going all at it, trying to score as many pinfall submissions or garnering DQs as much as possible. Because if someone gets DQ'd and you're the one that suffers it, then you get the point. It's going to be a fun match. Hell to cover, but a fun match to watch. And while it seems a little complicated, it's just more that there's a lot of moving parts to the match. But everything kind of makes sense if you just think about it line by line, I should say. So, yeah. If I had to put... Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. All I was going to say I'm kind of looking through the roster too here, and like there's a few names that kind of stick out to me too, especially for the men, like your Cameron Grimes. You know, we also have obviously Dante Chen. Obviously. But you know, there was him. Who else? Somebody just stuck out to me, and now I can't think of who it was. Oh, Nathan Frazier. You know, I could certainly see him in the match as well, but I'm really curious to see how they go about picking who's going to be in the match and then also picking the order of the entrance in the match, because obviously you want to come in last so you can
You want to come in first because that way you get the most chance opportunities to get points.
Yeah, all right. I guess I'm thinking you want to spend the least amount of time in the match because, you know, that way everybody – I'm thinking Royal Rumble. So, yeah, you know what?
But think about, Steve Austin, was it 98 when he just threw everybody out and was waiting on people? If you can get out there – did you watch the Brock Lesnar-Kurt Angle Iron Man match on SmackDown in, like, 2004?
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay. So do you remember how Brock Lesnar immediately took the chair and just beat the hell out of Kurt Angle and took the DQ fall there just so he could – because he knew that
advantage.
If he did that, exactly, that could definitely happen in this match. And they're probably not going to book it that way, but strategically, you could have it to where someone builds up a lot of pinfalls or submissions or a lot of points in the beginning of the match while people are still waiting to enter. And then the last 10 minutes, they're all just scrambling a championship scramble to try and reach that point. And maybe that person gets arrogant and they lay off, and they, at the very last second, they get overtaken by someone else. That could be there. So, I think that Lesnar angle playbook is a real good way to start this match on the men's side. I don't know about the women's side, because I need to think about who's going to be in it, but that could be a real good way to start, especially if the men's one starts off deadline.
I'm really hoping that the men's match is off the charts, and it actually does something to kickstart the men's main event scene. Cause like we were talking about it earlier, Bron Breakker and the NXT champion. Like, I don't think about Bron Breakker as champion. Like, I never think about him. Yeah. You know, like, if I'm not actively trying to think of who the NXT champion is, and Kelly says this all the time, but if I'm not actively trying to think of it, like, I don't think about him. And, I don't know. I really want to see a shakeup in the men's division.
Well, you know what this reminds me of? You're talking about people like Brazier, and there's Axiom, Carmelo Hayes, Wesley, people, all these people that we like who aren't the title, but the main title holders. Reminds me of WCW and all the cruiserweights are getting all the pub and all the hype, and they weren't getting, you know, the placement on the card as much.
Yeah. You know, I was actually thinking you were going to talk about this, like the so-called SmackDown 6.
There aren't enough. I don't think there's enough people to be a SmackDown 6 on NXT right now that I would legitimately consider.
I wasn't going to.
The SmackDown 6 was like running the show, you know?
Right. I didn't necessarily mean like six people. I just kind of thought like the comparison for a comparison, because in a way, like, you know, the SmackDown 6. I can't remember exactly who the six were off the top of my head.
It was he who should not be named. There was Rey Mysterio, Kurt Angle, Chavo Guerrero Jr., Edge, and who am I missing? Wow.
Angle?
Wow. I just said Angle.
JBL.
No, he wasn't part of the SmackDown 6. It was
Regardless, it was
Eddie.
Kind of
it
like
was Eddie.
Eddie.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
Benoit,
it was
Angle,
kind of like,
Eddie, Chavo, Edge, and Rey.
Yeah, and it was kind of like, you know, are they really going to be able to carry SmackDown, you know, because they were kind of, you know, they're all stars in their own right, especially now we look back on those names. But, you know, back then they weren't quite as big as, you know, some of the names they had on Raw, at least as perceived by Vince as big of names as on SmackDown, on Raw rather. And that's kind of how this match feels like. There isn't anybody like outside of Carmelo Hayes and, you know, maybe Apollo Crews that feel big enough like to be the NXT champion, you know, kind of be like almost like that household name, if you will. But
the face of the brand,
the face of the brand, that's probably the better way to put it. Face of the brand. But, you know, if they book this match right, like they can showcase a bunch of new stars and make a few new stars out of this too. So I'm really looking forward to this. I think it's a great idea, and I hope it's executed well. All right, we've made you wait for quite a bit, Ryan. Let's go over to Ryan from Cumberland and see what you thought of the show.
It was a fine show. The question on this Iron Survivor Challenges is, I think this is just a tune-up to test the match out to see how well it goes and then put it on the main roster for the next year or two.
Yeah.
You must have missed it when I said that, Ryan.
Yep. I was just going to say that Bruce basically said that just maybe 10 minutes ago. Like you said, they've been doing that quite a bit with NXT, kind of testing matches out down here first and then bringing them up. So it would not surprise me if we wound up seeing this on the main roster, you know, at some point down the line.
Okay. I said questions on Bron Breakker. He had a defense tonight against Von Wagner. I noticed on these house shows, he's only had one defense so far. So is there a reason why, like, when he does house show matches, it's mostly like either six-man tags or tag team matches, not a actual title defense like tonight?
I don't know if there's necessarily a reason for it. Like, if I had to just take a shot in the dark, which it's going to be a shot in the dark, you know, maybe they're doing that because people just kind of know you're not going to see – and then, you know, a title switch or, you know, at a house show for the most part. And I say that, and of course, I've been to a house show where there's a title switch.
Lowell, Massachusetts.
Lowell, Massachusetts, for, you know, Samoa Joe beat Finn Balor. I was
2015?
There. 2016. I'm staring at the poster on my wall as we speak. April 21st, 2016. I don't have the signed poster. I wanted to splurge the signed poster. And then, of course, after the match happened, I'm like, damn it, I should have bought the signed poster. but whatever. Now I don't remember why the hell we were talking about NXT Lowell. Why am I talking about NXT Lowell?
He brought up house shows and Breaker not.
Oh, right. Yeah. So, I don't really know why why they haven't been having him defend the title on house shows. I've kind of been reading that myself a little bit, that, you know, he's been in tag matches and stuff, but I don't know really what the reason is behind that. You know, my guess is they probably feel that that's the better spot for him, and they'll, you know, showcase a different title on the show. But that also kind of says something about what they might think about Bron Breakker and his title reign. Like I said, I think it's stale. I really think they need to shake it up. But I don't really know. Like, they putting him in multi-man matches and stuff, like, to me, that just kind of says that, like, they're trying to save his matches to be bigger matches on bigger shows or something like that too. Like, I don't really have a definitive answer, but that's just me kind of spitballing. Bruce, any ideas?
Well, generally, especially with NXT house shows, these are the places where people are testing out and learning and improving in front of a crowd that understands what they're there for and is a bit more forgiving, right? So you would think that we should remember that Breakker has only been wrestling for 2 years now, and he made NXT within about 6 months, 8 months of training or something like that. So he still has a ways to go. Now, the thing is, you can't have your NXT men's or women's champion in developmental matches on house shows, right? It just can't work that way. It's fine for when Raquel Gonzalez wasn't even on TV yet, because she was Raquel Gonzalez at the time, or even she was Reyna. She might have still been Reyna Gonzalez at the time. She was working with Rhea Ripley a lot, working through things over and over again before she finally made it and became what we knew of her in NXT. You just can't do that with Breakker or with Rose because they're champions. So I have one of two options it could be. So one, maybe he's nursing some injuries, and the best way they could protect him while still drawing a gate as the NXT champion is to have him in the tag team matches where he doesn't have to work as much. Maybe he gets the hot tag, does his thing. You know, he comes in, hits his flying shoulder tackles like John Cena. He hits the spear in the military press slam to get out of there. Cool. Or it could be that they still feel like he does need to improve a bit, and the house show environment is a little more loose and a little more, it's less structured, I should say. And so maybe they don't feel comfortable enough with him yet to be in that situation without being some sort of multi-team match. The other thing with house shows too is a lot of times a lot of silly stuff happens, and again, it's not something you probably want your champion to be involved with. So this is probably the best workaround of him learning on the job while still maintaining a bit of, not prestige, but appearance's sake, right? And then eventually getting to the point where he can be the one that headlines those shows as a singles champion by himself in singles matches. But yeah, I'm just going based off what we generally know these NXT house shows to be, and that is to work on your matches and your skills and your character. So, I mean, aside from that, though, I have to ask Tom more about this because he's more in tune with that, and I think Tom is actually going to be at the show next week to see the Lee and Hayes match. So
I wonder if we can convince Tom to be an on-site correspondent.
I was just going to say that. So we'll talk to Tom if he does end up going.
We'll work
and
on
see
it.
If he can come, see if he can hop on and let us know kind of the experience and what it was like. Because I don't think he's been to an actual television NXT since before the pandemic. And so I want to see what the changes are.
I think he's been to a couple. I remember him saying he took his kids.
Okay.
But But I'm gonna use the guilt trip angle. I haven't actually, with the exception of, like, you know, our Twitter chat and a couple text messages to Tom here and there, I have not verbally spoken to Tom since the last time he was on the show for his final show. So I'm gonna guilt trip him. I'm gonna be like, Tom, come on, do it for me. I don't think it's gonna work. I don't think
Data,
it's gonna work.
No shame about that, but
absolutely not. I have.
I think I'll leave it at that.
All right, sounds good. Ryan, any follow-up or anything else?
I have a question on Kiana James. I think she's going to do the Miss York gimmick in that she takes these hicks, like an example would be Tommy Rich and Ricky Morton, and she turns them into like a businessman proper person. Like that might happen with this Brooks Jensen guy because he seems to be under the spell of her, and maybe he can be the modern-day version of Thomas Rich.
I mean, maybe. I hadn't really thought about that. I don't really know. Maybe. Bruce, do you have anything on that? Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but
York didn't really wrestle, right?
No,
I don't
she
think
was
so.
Just the one that sort of like mind
right,
controlled.
She's just the manager,
people.
Right? Yeah, right. So James is actually a wrestler, and there's that, and she does have her assistant, G, so there's that. There's a difference there. I think she's just trying to play more of that rich a-hole who thinks that she can control people by buying up what they hold dear to them, even if that thing has no value to them. Like, think about the Million Dollar
Man
just paying off people.
That's the way I take it,
yeah. Yeah, think about the Million Dollar Man just paying off people for the hell of it because he could, because he knew he held power over them, right? I think it's all a power play because she knows how dearly Fallon Henley holds that family bar in her heart and in her emotions. And does James need it? No, of course not. Her whole character is that she has more money than any of us could ever dream of having. So her having this bar, owning this bar, is only a ploy and only a move to hold some power, some sort of trophy over the head of Fallon Henley that Henley can really never get back. And that's why Henley has been so adamant about denying her that opportunity, because she knows it's the one thing that she has, the only thing that she has that Kiana James does not have and cannot have unless she gives in. So that's all I take it as. I think that if you look at how James was just smiling with the evil grin after the match today, all she's doing is trying to get under Fallon Henley's skin to the point that, okay, fine, you've made my life a living hell. Just take it. Go. Leave me alone. I think that's the end game for James. Will that be the actual end game? I don't know. I've actually been, and I've said it multiple times throughout the past couple of months, I've been impressed with Henley's development over the past few months, both in character and in the ring. She's still not what she'd want to be at a top level, but I'd say she's probably at the same level as Indy Hartwell in the ring right now, and she's really developed as a character. So for me, I think James is just the she's the plot device to get Henley over as a mid-card baby face right now.
Ryan, any follow-up, or we'll give you one more?
Follow-up on that is Brooks Jensen. Any possibility that either he's intentionally give that deed away to that bar, or somehow he's responsible for Henley losing the bar because of his actions?
Well, if that happened, then Fallon Henley has a real, real bad power of attorney. But then beyond that, I wouldn't be surprised if he's fired before the end of the year. He's got nothing. Like this, their match today, with the Dyad, I cannot put this any more strongly. That was one of the most boring matches I've ever seen in my life. That match was completely a dud from the second the bell rang to the very end. It just never got into another gear. You knew exactly what was going to happen. You knew there was going to be interference. You knew Briggs and Jensen were going to lose. It just kind of like the Breaker-Wagner match. And then when you get to the Hartwell and Paxley match, it just like two. I've said before, it's good to have some predictability. It's good to have some A to B. But when the entire show is this predictable, it's just not the path. You need to find that nice balance of predictability and surprise factor, and they did not do that tonight. It made pretty much everything but the Last Woman Standing match and the McDonough Cruz match boring. I don't know how else to put it.
No, I agree with you. Matter of fact, I quoted you in the hits and misses, and I said that, you know, I'm like Bruce said it best. This was an absolute just dud. It was a boring match. Like it, I think Brooks Jensen is holding Josh Briggs back, hands down. Because I see something in Josh Briggs. I can see what they see in Josh Briggs.
Former Evolve champion.
You know, and exactly. Like he's definitely got it. And I think that this pairing with Brooks Jensen is really holding him back. Jensen, like he tries, but unfortunately he's not there. The charisma isn't there. He's not on par in the ring with Briggs.
He's in the wrong spot. His timing is off.
Yeah.
Like even tonight, he was not in the right spot for the Kiana James punch, or when she got punched, he kind of had to move forward even more, which made it look even worse because it looked like he knew what was about to happen when he shouldn't know it. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so, I agree with you. I definitely think that it would not surprise me whatsoever if he's, you know, released at some point in the near future, you know, like the next round of cuts or whatever. Granted, with Vince gone, maybe there won't be like mass cuts after WrestleMania this year. Who knows? We'll see. I don't know.
At the rate that Triple H is bringing back people, they're starting to get a bloated roster again. We'll see.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm going to remain hopeful. Ryan, did you have another point, or shall we move on?
The only other thing is that Ariel, I don't know how you even say his last name. Dumb knees. You think he has a future as like a enhancement talent that could be just a guy that gets onto like a major losing streak, like say like 0-300 on the main roster. That's just so much fun to watch him get beat every week and see if he can eventually pick up a victory. Or you think he has no future at all?
Who was it that you're talking about?
He wrestled Beer and Shanga. He was the guy that was like about 5 foot tall.
Okay.
Are we talking about? Right. I think in my report I said his name was. Let me find it. Go ahead, Nate, and I'll find the name.
Yeah, because it says honestly, I didn't even think they flashed the name because I even went back.
They didn't flash the names. Vic said the first guy was I called Jobber One, George Cannon, and then Jobber Two. I think his trunks on the back said Ariel Dominguez, but I only got a quick look.
Okay.
And Ariel Dominguez was a tiny guy.
Okay, yeah. No, I mean, like, from what I saw, I mean, you know, he was certainly, like, the two of them, both of the jobbers there tonight, like, they took a beating from Indushare. Like, you know, they made them look great. So would not surprise me if they had some sort of a future in NXT. I don't know anything about them, so I really can't speak to, you know, anything like that. But, you know, I'm down for, like, another... You know, who was it?
Kurt Hawkins.
I was going to say Curtis Axel. I knew that was wrong. I'd be down for another one of those.
He has the Royal Rumble record for not being eliminated in one Rumble. He lasted a whole year.
I know. Like, you know, so there's that, too. All right, Ryan, cool. Thank you very much, as always, man. We will talk with you next time.
Real quickly on that Dominguez, the Ariel Dominguez thing.
Sure.
The only way it would work is if they went with the Will Ferrara playbook from Ring of Honor, the small guy, but who was always scrappy, never backed down from a fight, and always gave it his all. That's not what we saw tonight. They were scared jobbers,
no.
Which makes sense. And then the other thing about the match I want to point out, not all squashes have to be quick. They just need to be dominant,
no.
And that's what this was. So this was just 3.5 minutes of pure domination. That's what it needed to be. It didn't need to be 90 seconds. It didn't need to be 10 seconds. It needed to be 3.5 minutes of what exactly it was, and that was pure domination. The great way to get into share back into the mind of viewers if they didn't see them the first time. And then the promo afterwards, I think we forget just how well they can speak, even though they're from India and English is not their first language, right? So
especially Mahan.
Yeah, Veer is great. he was the one that was in, I think, the Pittsburgh Pirate system as a pitcher. That always just amazed at his leaping ability, that leaping elbow he hits in the ring. And he doesn't even run. He just jumps. He clears the top rope on that. So they made it very clear what they want. They want the NXT tag titles because, as they said, and this is, I don't see why we can't have more promos like this to set the characters right away as they
right.
debut.
I thought
in India,
beautiful.
We are superstars
beautiful.
Because that's what we are. But here, we don't get any respect. The only way for us to get respect is by taking out the Creed brothers. So we are going to demolish you. That is exactly what you want from a debut, or I guess here a re-debut promo from a dominant act, is to succinctly state why they're there, what drives them, and what their goal is going to be. And that is to defeat the Creeds. I'll tie this into the segment with the Creeds and Ivy Nile, Tatum Paxley, because they're starting to show hints of dissension between the women and the men. Nile said they got over the Damon Kemp hump, so they need to focus on Pretty Deadly. But Julius and Brutus said, no, they need to take out Indus Share first because Indus Share called them out. And Nile said, I personally think you two are focusing on the wrong team here. But she left it at that and walked away. So keep an eye on that because this could be the actual moment where the beginning of the angle where we see the split of Ivy Nile and Tatum Paxley from Diamond Mine, and where Diamond Mine is just going to become the Creed Brothers. And that could be where they end up. They could reconcile, but I think that's something we need to keep an eye on because I believe that Indus Share is going to beat the Creed Brothers if they have a match at Deadline. I think they're going to be the ones who emerge from this feud as the victors. And I think that's going to present interesting options for what happens between Diamond Mind.
His name isn't Victor. It's Veer. Sorry. I had to make the joke. I couldn't help myself. I agree. I think the Indus Share will probably beat the Creeds if it is a match at Deadline or whatever match it is, if it's next week or whatever. I do feel like I think they should. I hate to see the Creeds lose, but I did also sense kind of what you were talking about tonight between between the Creeds and Ivy Nile, especially where she kind of came out a couple times and was like, I think you're barking up the wrong tree. I thought there was some great character development for both the Creeds as well as Ivy Nile, and that's what I want to see out of Ivy Nile. She's
and
awesome.
Usually she's pretty stiff, but I think she delivered the lines here as you would kind of expect someone in that situation to deliver them.
Exactly, and that's exactly what I was just going to say. That's what I've wanted to see out of Ivy Nile is better promos and to actually see her deliver them like she was comfortable, and that's exactly what she did tonight. I mean,
it was relatable.
It was relatable. I mean, it wasn't like an Oscar winning performance or anything like that, but it's exactly what I wanted to see out of Ivy Nile.
I mean, for Ivy Nile, it might as well be an Oscar winning performance, but
no, exactly. I don't want to take anything away from what she's doing. Cause I want to see her continue to improve. I love her in the ring. This is exactly what I want to see out of her, behind the scenes backstage. I kind of did sense some of that, dissension in the ranks there. It would make sense because, I mean, Diamond Mine has been a very fractured group for a while now. So it would make sense if that's kind of the direction that it went. But Indus Share tonight in this jobber match, I loved it personally. I'm really happy to see Indus Share back together, period, because they had so much potential the first time around. But I don't think that – I think they still kind of needed to work and kind of hone their craft. And they've been able to do that over the past, year and a half that they haven't been together, however long it's been. Tonight was a phenomenal squash match. Like you said, sometimes squash matches don't need to be 10 seconds. This was great. So what, 3.5 minutes? It felt like it was even longer than that. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It just felt like
Brock Lesnar, John Cena.
Yeah. It just felt like they were brutalizing these guys. And that's what I wanted. I wanted to see Ivy Nile improve on the mic. That's what I want to see out of Indus Share. I want to see these two giant Indian monsters just beat the shit out of people. Pardon my French. It's like I feel like it was a great re-debut for them. The as you said, the promo after was phenomenal. I forget how good the two of them are with their English. Sangha, sometimes, like when he was trying to do like the behind the scenes good guy, like helping out, I forget the heck's her name. Valentina, was it Valentina Feroz?
Annual is really on before whichever one got hurt.
Yeah, that's right. You know, so like he kind of came off a little weird then, but like tonight, I feel like he was back in his element, kind of, you know, next to Veer Mahan and in that character and in Dusher. So he, you know, he delivered a great promo. Veer Mahan especially delivered a great promo tonight. I'm really intrigued to see what the future holds for Dusher in the company, period. You know, it kind of... It's kind of funny because, you know, hey, Veer Mahan's coming to Raw, Veer Mahan's coming to Raw, Veer Mahan's coming to Raw, and now here he is back in NXT. But I feel like this is the best place for him right now, and I think there are going to be big things in the future for Dusher, especially if tonight is anything to go off of. So
the last thing I'll say on this segment is it was a subtle thing, but they lost the stereotypical markers of India. For the most part, they didn't have any of the face paint on they did when they were led by Malcolm Bivens. Now Sophie Hathaway, which I think had more to do with who was in charge then, right? Needing to make sure that you identify them as foreign people. But so their ring attire was a little bit more traditional for India. But beyond that, like, you, they didn't have, beyond looking at them and like, oh, yeah, those guys are definitely from India, they didn't have the stereotypical markers that we would normally see in American media when it comes to people from India. So I'd say kudos there.
Yeah, no, good point. Definitely good point. I really like the look tonight. Definitely like their look. All right, cool. So let's see. What else haven't we talked about yet? Zoe Stark. Let's talk about Zoe Stark. So she came out tonight and kind of explained her actions as to why she turned last week against Nikita Lyons. Man, I love it when a heel says stuff that's just so true because everything that she said here tonight was just so true in my mind. You know, basically she was talking about how she had to carry Nikita Lyons. That's a story they told as well. But it was also kind of true. I mean, Zoe Stark is a much better, you know, in-ring performer and on the mic as she kind of, I thought she was phenomenal on the mic tonight. She, couple hangups, but I thought, you know, overall she was great on the mic tonight. But she also, you know, she was talking, like I said, about, you know, having to carry Nikita Lyons, you know, consistently losing and having to apologize rather than consistently winning. And she was, you know, basically just sick of it and she snapped. I thought it was some great character work out of Zoe Stark. You know, obviously now she's dressing in black because she's a heel.
But
she had the leather jacket on. That was black. I'm like, I remember something on top being black. So yeah, like overall, I'm really intrigued for this, you know, this character shift for Zoe Stark. You know, I think it's what the character needed. You know, when she's kind of just been, you know, white meat babyface the entire time she's been in NXT. And when she came, you know, or sorry, before her injury, rather, you know, I remember Tom Kelly and I talking about, you know, how, you know, she's going to be NXT champion and, you know, all these great things for her. And then when she came back, she just felt kind of just another, like there wasn't room for her. Like she came back the wrong time, you know, like that just wasn't really anything for her to do. They stuck with Nikita Lyons and now here she is. This is kind of the most relevant that I feel like she's been in a while. And I really am, like, just like in Dusher, I'm really intrigued to see how this heel character kind of wreaks havoc on the, you know, NXT women's division. I like the direction. I like the attitude change and kind of the shift in promo. She's never been a bad promo, especially for NXT. But I think tonight in this heel character, like, she just embraced it and I felt like it didn't feel like she was reciting a scripted promo either. It kind of felt like she, you know, trying to hit some bullet points, but a lot of it kind of came from the heart. Also, like with Wesley tonight, that was something I wanted to mention too. You know, in that segment with Wesley and Carmelo Hayes, same thing with him. Like it just sounded like he was shooting off the cuff. And that's, I love that in wrestling. So, yeah, on this segment, Bruce.
So I wasn't as high on it, but that was more up and down. But I think she definitely hit her stride when she was hitting those parts that were definitely okay beforehand, but hit enough of reality that fans are like, oh, yeah, yeah. But the issue here is what she was saying. When you have a heel say these things, because of the tie to reality, it comes off as a face. And this was obviously Zoe Stark. I mean, last week, obviously, but tonight was her cementing a heel character. But when you do it with a babyface promo, how do I put this? It wasn't babyface in your traditional rah-rah, blah, 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 right? It was babyface, and what she was saying was true, right? Or at least believable to a certain extent. Because she brought up how I wish the same energy and effort I put into training went into the training instead of into posing for social media, right? Which that's what Nikita Lyons does. Not to say that that takes away from her training, but she posts enough on social media to where it's believable to fans that it's detracting from her training, right? And about carrying the team, that was all there. And Stark was the one who was taking all those losses. I think when we're on, whenever Kelly's on, he always mentions how Nikita Lyons still hasn't taken a pin yet. If you put yourself in the shoes of Zoe Stark, if you think about how she laid out the promo, you really feel for a Stark and think that she should really be the face and not Lyons, right? But what they're doing is definitely setting up a massive babyface return for Lyons because they clearly want her to be the babyface of the future, regardless of if she deserves to be in that position or not. But as we know, in our society, deserve ain't got nothing to do with it, as the great Omar Little said. It's about nepotism. It's about looks. It's about wealth, assets. As Zoe Stark even said, all you fans who cheer for me and clap for me right now, you're the same ones who like those posts and go to bed at night dreaming about Nikita Lyons' assets. And I just like, oh, that was the line right there, right? So while she found her stride there and really hit a good mark, I do think it took a little bit of time to get there for her to feel comfortable with it. She also smiled on her way to the ring and before the commercial. It was supposed to be more of a heelish kind of smirk. But again, with what she was saying, they run the risk of it coming off as more face and her being cheered instead of booed moving forward. Right? She received some boos tonight when she came out, and some of the fans, not all, a small section of the fans were chanting, "Zoe's angry," or something like that. And I will give her credit. She worked through the crowd trying to mess her up pretty well and powered through it. But I do think that they're in a difficult spot here because they need to make sure that the next week and moving forward, Stark is booked as a heel. Don't have her say anything. Just have her come out and beat the hell out of people, do something in the back, reassert that she's a heel because of her promo tonight. Her as a heel, though, again, makes it less likely that I think she's the one to take it off Mandy Rose unless they turn Rose's face. But beyond that, I think that if you're Zoe Stark, you should look at what you did tonight as a positive step and looking to build on that moving forward.
All right. What else haven't we talked about yet? We talked about Breaker and Wagner. We talked about Cruz and McDonough. Indy Sharon versus the Jobber guys. Briggs Jensen versus Dyad. Indy Hartwell versus Tatum Paxley. Really anything to talk about there?
It was Hartwell won again. There was some distraction, but who made the distraction? I'm trying to remember now that it wasn't. Hartwell grabbed the face mask off Paxley, who is still wearing it because she suffered that broken nose. And then she tossed it to Ivy Nile and then hit her running elbow to the back of the head finisher, kind of like Will Ospreay's Hidden Blade. And in the back, Roxanne Perez approached her and just said, you know, did you have to do all that? And Indy's like, here we go. You can't just congratulate me. Miss Goody Two Shoes has to come over here and do all this. And basically said that sure, I may have broken her. I could have broken her nose again, but if I have to break a nose to get into that match and win that match at deadline, then that's what I'm going to do. And what I think what they're trying to do here is navigate the fine line between Hartwell being a heel and Hartwell being a face, because she's not, again, she's not saying anything that's false, right? Everything she's saying is accurate, and that shift in her attitude and her ring, her stiffness in the ring has led to her most successful time in NXT. So why would she go different? And if you're Perez, you could then from her perspective, you could look at Perez as kind of the annoying little sister or tag along that is a bit naive, right? And this might lead to a segment where they're both in the match at deadline and Hartwell literally beats the naivety out of Roxanne Perez. And that causes Perez, as she did in her match with Sal D'Amora, really just get in there and be physical. Who knows? Great showing for either woman, I would say, though, in the match. Again, this match, the match with Jensen and Briggs and the Dyad, and there was one other match, I think. Those two were just matches that were basically angles. So yeah. It's hard to really get a lot out of those. But, yeah, good for Hartwell getting all these wins, and hopefully it leads to her. I don't think she's going to be the one to win at deadline, but I think she's going to have a good enough showing to where she takes a step up into the next echelon of women's competitors in the singles division.
I hope so. I think it's well-deserved. Okay, let me go. Let's go over to the mailbag here, and we're going to go to mail from Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, we haven't heard from you for a while, so it's good to hear from you. He says, "Hey, Nate and Bruce, I know it's been a while and I just got home, but I haven't talked to you guys lately. Hope you're doing fantastic. I've only watched the Braun Breaker versus Von Wagner match, but I wanted to bring it up. Honestly, I think Braun should have won fairly easily. I don't like Wagner at all, and I don't think that he should have gotten the offense in that he did. This is probably the best match that he's had, and that's not saying much at all. Nothing about him is main event other than his size. He has no charisma, and he's not that great of a wrestler. I thought Breaker continues to get better every week. So two questions. First, do you think he should have won a lot quicker than he did? And second, do you think that him going to the main roster sooner would be better because he's gone through most of the really good talent in NXT? And I'm not that pumped about him and Apollo assuming he won, which he did. Apollo did win. Guys, I love the show. Hopefully I can call in next week finally, and hope you have an amazing night. Go VIP, everyone. My lips just did not want to work there for some reason. That was weird. Sean, we hope you call in too, man. It's been a while since we've heard your voice. So we talked a little bit about this earlier in the show. The Von Wagner Breaker match, I do think it was a little bit long. I was a bit higher on the match than Bruce, Bruce and Darrell were anyway. But you know, that's not saying much. Because like you said, this was probably one of Wagner's best matches, and that's really not saying much. He's not at the level that I feel like he should be, to kind of be like in the, main event scene, if you will. But, with the way that they've been booking him and his size and everything like that, to be kind of like a, upper mid card, the main event gatekeeper, like almost like the Kane role, if you will. I kind of feel like that's where he's going to be slotted. I can see him maybe getting like a token NXT title run, maybe, but I have a feeling he's just going to be booked as big, bad, nasty monster that maybe gets an NXT title shot. But for the most part, he's just going to be booked as, that sort of a gatekeeper role. Because of that, I don't think that Breaker should have won sooner than he did. Maybe a little bit quicker. Like I said, the match is a little bit too long, maybe a little bit faster, but I still think that Von Wagner should have been able to get some good offense in there simply because of the way they've been booking him. I don't necessarily, I would rather see somebody else in the position myself, but considering that, this is where he is and the way that they've been booking him, I feel like it kind of makes sense for him to get the offense in that he did. Braun Breaker fits the character too. There's a lot of times where he does get his ass kicked, but then, gets right up and does the Roman Reigns spear, get the pin, get the win, kind of go from there. So, you know, it didn't bother me too much. Bruce, anything to add?
I guess I'll just say that I think Sean going to be really happy when he listens back to this and hears my comments on that match.
I think you're probably right.
The only thing I'll add then is that this match showed that just how Breaker is muscular, but he's not very tall. He's about as tall as his dad was, and you can see the height difference in Wagner here, and it's going to be even more stark when he goes to Raw and SmackDown, and he's going up against, you know, 6'6 Randy Orton or whatnot, and let's just see how that translates, because I know size isn't everything, but WWE fans have been conditioned to think that you need to be a certain size to be thought of as a champion, or at least at main championship level, and not the mid-card title. So I would say keep an eye on that regarding Breaker as he moves along, because that's the one thing I think beyond his promo abilities that can really hinder him as he moves up and maybe only leaves him at best kind of like what his uncle was. And that's possibly a title holder or a main title holder when things are very low, but most often just someone who's going to be in the main event scene.
All right, we're going to go over to an email from Kevin Catani. Kevin says, salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. Listening to last week's The Fix, and one of their topics inspired my question for this week. Who do each of you think is being underutilized in NXT? Any reason or defense is fine. And why do you think they're being underused? Do you think your choice could turn a corner, or is their fate sealed? Yes, Dante Chen. It's clearly Dante Chen. Let's see. Underutilized talent. Looking up and down the roster right now, does anybody stick out to you? Because I don't have anybody that sticks out to me off the top of my head.
The only person I could think about is out because of surgery, though. That's Tiffany Stratton. I think that she has all the makings of someone who's going to be a top-of-the-line women's champion, women's main event person. And I just think she's just not there because she had surgery. She was doing well when she was on the show. If I look at the men's division, up until recently, I was going to say Wes Lee, but that's obviously not the case anymore. Frazer and Axiom, I think, are the two big ones in the men's division. I know they have their little thing, but I think they're kind of like the Eddie and Jericho of Nitro kind of right now in NXT, in that they can just do so much. And sure, Axiom needs to go a little further on the mic. But I think in the ring, they just might be the two best in terms of putting together the kind of fast-paced, high-flying technical matches that you don't necessarily expect to see in WWE. On the women's side, aside from Stratton, Chu needs a character redesign, which I think is kind of coming soon because she's kind of hinting at that in her interview tonight.
Tyler Bate.
I think he's injured too. I'm
looking at an injury list and he's not listed, but
Bate could be one. Yeah. I think Big Body Javi's right where he needs to be.
Yeah.
So if I had to pick out of people who aren't injured, I'd probably say Frazer, Axiom, Chu, and Bate. Dante Chen, of course.
Quincy Elliott? Maybe.
You know, I don't think Quincy. I think he's where he needs to be right now. Obviously,
I just want to see
have
more.
A lot of it. True, you know, I understand, but in the ring, he definitely needs more work. His character, charisma, and presentation are all there. I think it's those four. If I had to add another woman to that list, I think this is one of those where you're betting on. It's a high risk, high reward kind of thing. I think they need to give Lash Legend a lot more time on TV and see really what they have there. And I think if they hit with her, they really have something. So that's one of those where it's all about the risk, though. So I'm not sure if I would put that as a comfortable thing, but definitely the other four.
Yeah, for sure. And there's one other name that kind of sticks out, and it's Cameron Grimes. Cause he hasn't done a whole lot in the last like month or so, if memory serves, unless he was on, I don't think he was on TV last week.
It was last week or two weeks ago. It was
he's been around, right? But he hasn't really done a whole lot of note for a while. You know, or for a little bit anyway.
I feel like he's definitely being – he's been underutilized for a little while. I feel like at least since his U.S. title run.
U.S. title, North American championship?
North American title run. Yeah, I mean, you know,
always tough, though,
you
when
know
always
the U.S.
that he's going to move.
The U.S. is in North America. It was close. Come on.
So U.S.-centric, aren't you, Nate? Just American exceptionalism, right?
that and it's, you know, past midnight here, and I got up at like 5:30 for some ungodly reason this morning. I don't even know why I was up that early. My body was just like, Nate, get the hell out of bed. And then I did. But anyway, so I think, you know, with that rant about me sleeping or not sleeping, that's going to bring us to the end of our show tonight. There's still a few things we didn't necessarily talk about. Nothing, I think anything necessarily of note. And if there is anything of note that you wanted to talk about, feel free to either give us a call, 515-605-9345 next week, or give us an email, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, and let us know what we missed, and we'll touch on it then. We'll touch on it then. As I said, I'm Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg, and I do the NXT hits and misses. Check out my column tonight for the column that I wrote tonight for NXT. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. Find me on Twitter at B_Lee253 and find my report that was done live for tonight's show on the Torch and on the VIP side. And remember, stay Ilyanov.
I was going to say, remember, knowing is half the battle, but whatever. G.I. Joe.